Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of Stand Up and Marvel. Today's episode, in honor of Asian American and Pacific Islander Heritage Month, we are talking about Shang-Chi and the Legend of the Ten Rings. This is our in-depth review episode with spoilers. So if you haven't seen the movie or you just want to hear our overall thoughts on the movie, check out our previous non-spoiler episode. So this is your final spoiler warning. So if you're still with us, let's get into it. All right, let's get into this. So let's talk about the casting choices. We talked about it a little bit in our non-spoiler segment. Obviously, we didn't want to go into too much detail, though, to spoil who was actually in the movie. Obviously, a lot of that is already known, or at least assumed from the trailers. But, you know, first of all, we've got Shang-Chi, obviously, played by Simu Liu, and then his best friend, Katie, played by Awkwafina. And then we've got the Mandarin, played by Tony Leung. And then Ying Li, which is the Mandarin's wife, played by Fala Chen. I'm not going to keep listing them off here, but just really solid casting all around. I like pretty much everybody's performance, the whole movie, and especially all the interactions, all the jokes that happened between Sean and Katie. A lot of comedy there. And, you know, we talked about this in our non-spoiler. She was kind of a little bit annoying at first, but as it went on, I became more and more entertained by her antics.
Yeah, I agree with that. At first, I did find her kind of a weird casting choice at the beginning of the movie. But then as, you know, the movie keeps going on and on and on, you just kind of feel like, you kind of think about it and it's just like, you know, I don't see anybody else who could have portrayed this the way that she did.
It was a very unique style, yeah.
It was a very unique style, and it was like not your typical Marvel style of character. It almost came off almost like a little bit of Chris Hemsworthy Thor, a little bit. Where it's like really aloof and just comedic one-liners here and there with her. But
aloof is definitely a very good word for it. Like, there's one particular moment that screams aloof to me, like when Shang-Chi or Sean at the time went to her house her apartment to pick her up in the morning, and they were about to walk out, and then I don't remember the exact line, but she was saying, like, you know, I'll make you guys proud of me someday. And then her brother said to her, I'm really proud of you, sis. Parking cars is really hard. And then she gave this like look to him and said, like, thanks, bro. And she gets, like,
really big smile. she's like thanks,
is she
bro.
Being
maybe
serious when... or is she messing with him?
But then she continues going, like, maybe when you pass your driver's test, you'll do the same thing.
Yeah.
I was like, man, she's like, it's like when she's walking out, she's like, I know I'm the disappointment of the family, but you know what? What I do is hard. she was a very interesting casting choice at the beginning, but that, as it went on, it just turned into like it. I just laughed at a lot of her moments, when she questions Sean's name change when they're on the plane. I mean. Yeah. I thought that was hilarious too. And he's teaching her how to say his actual Chinese name.
Right.
I thought that was pretty funny. But yeah, she's definitely got her moments in this movie.
For sure.
What I was really,
she's so ridiculous. Why would you change his name just that moment that you're talking about? Why would you change your name to Sean?
So you thought it was a good idea to change for somebody going into hiding to change his name from Sean to Sean? It's like, I was 15 at the time.
Oh my gosh.
It was really great. That scene is like, that was really funny. I really enjoyed that scene. But as far as casting and goes, I was really glad to see some old faces show up in this movie. So kudos to the casting people for getting like old faces back into it, because sometimes they'll be like, oh, we'll just recast them. But I'm glad, like I'm really glad that they brought Ben Kingsley back into this movie.
What else is he in? I'm sorry.
Ben Kingsley, who played Trevor.
Iron Man 3.
He's the actor who played the terrorist Mandarin.
Right.
But he's been in other movies. Yeah, he's been in other movies as well. But this character was just so great, because when you meet him in Iron Man 3, you're like, I actually always wondered what happened to him.
Yeah.
And then finally we find out.
They had that one shot, though. Did you ever see the one shot with Ben Kingsley?
Yeah.
So when he's in prison, I think Vulture's in there, and Scorpion, some other mm-hmm. characters, and then the Ten Rings people end up breaking him out of prison. And I guess that is a bit of a spoiler, but it's like a 2-minute video, so for anybody who hasn't seen them, there's a whole series of one shots on Disney Plus. That's what the series is called. There's a whole category for them somewhere on there. Most of them aren't super important or relevant, but there's a couple that are actually pretty important. So there's the Hail to the King one, which we're talking about here, and then there's the Agent Carter one shot, which is very important, because that basically wraps up the series that ended on a cliffhanger. So that's arguably the most important. Most of them, though, are just for fun.
Right.
But those two were pretty important.
Yeah. And to see Ben Kingsley's Mandarin character, his Mandarin character, Trevor, the actor, to see him play a significant role in this movie just was, I thought it was great. It was a great way to really incorporate him into this movie.
I was glad he got to play a role, but that was some of the non-spoiler episode. I was talking about some things that happened for the sake of convenience and just really bothered me. And his appearance was one of those things that just really, it was extremely convenient the way that it happened to work out. The fact that he was in the it's not exactly a prison, like the basement or wherever they were, like locked in
the dungeon or whatever.
Yeah, but it was just the fact that he was locked in the dungeon with them, and then he just so happened to have this magical creature with him, and he just so happened to be able to communicate with this magical creature,
which they don't even explain.
Never explain that, like, just that whole like series of events. And one more thing in that same scene, the fact that the Mandarin, this guy who has, you know, basically ruled the entire world, give or take, you know, he's clearly very intelligent, and he makes this really surprising mistake of locking his daughter in the same dungeon that she escaped from before without making any changes to security or anything like that.
That is,
he's just asking her to escape. And clearly he didn't want her to, because it did not work out in his favor. It wasn't part of his plot or anything. So that was one of the things that I really had a problem with this movie.
You know,
when I was talking about plot holes, that was kind of,
I can understand where you're coming from with that, but you can also, you know, at this point in time in the movie, the Mandarin, Tony Leung, however you say his last name, I'm not even sure. In this movie, in this time point where he locks his kids in the dungeon and everything, this guy is not at his best. He's not exactly at his best cognitive thinking at this point. I mean, he's being tempted from he's hearing his wife. He's hearing his wife's voice. He's obsessing with saving her and everything, that he's just, you know, he says lock him up.
Losing his marbles.
And you know, to be honest, and in his defense too, he didn't actually say lock him up in a different dungeon than him. Maybe he knew he was there, and they just didn't know his minions were gonna lock them in the same one. You know,
I can see that argument, but I guess a counter to it Why didn't he change anything about the dungeon? Because I
escaped
a
too.
Long time ago. And he was definitely sharp and with it at the time. If somebody escapes from your prison, you're gonna beef up security, you know. But
you know what?
He never did.
But you know, he also said, like, when he brought them home, he's like, I always know where my children are. So I'm pretty sure. Well, I'm pretty like, again, you know, his cognitive thing is not actually at his best, but you know, there is, you know, and when they did escape, he wasn't exactly like worried either, because he was pretty confident in what was going to go down in the long run.
Yeah, but I don't know. It just,
it is, I do agree with
they were trying to stop him. He knew that they were trying to stop him. Like, I could see that argument if like them escaping somehow worked to his advantage.
Right.
Doesn't.
Yeah, because like it definitely would have worked with, like, if he followed after them and everything, but he just waited and he didn't know that they knew how to get through without. You know, like, I'm pretty sure, because he did make the comment, he's like, they'll return when I bring their mother back.
Yeah.
And everything. So,
but, I mean, whatever.
It is what it is. But I do understand what you're talking about. It's like, really? You didn't seal that tunnel with, like, you didn't blow that tunnel for it to cave in so she can't get out the same way?
Yeah, or just, like, fill it with concrete or something.
Yeah, fill it with concrete or something. It's just like, it just made it really easy. I would have actually liked a more like thought out way of escaping,
right? Yeah,
your situation instead of her. And you know, it's actually weird if you actually think about that. If you take I had to look at it frame by frame. She kicks down the wall from the other side into the cell. But so where did she go? You know, I saw
maybe
it.
She like crawled into like a sewer or something.
Well, and to be honest, she grew up there, so she must know every
layout for sure
of that place. So, you know, locking her in a place that she knows every inch of, she obviously knows countermeasures and stuff like that. But I thought that was just weird that she came from the outside of the wall into the cell, kicking down the wall, and I was like,
yeah, that's weird, I didn't notice that.
Where'd she come from? she was locked on the inside with them.
She has some kind of like teleporting ability that we don't know about.
Yeah, right.
Maybe that's how she was able to get out. Nothing you can do about that unless you have some sort of like power dampening shield.
I know, right? But I did think that was a little weird when I saw the scene, but again, they didn't really explain anything about it.
I'll have to look at that again. I don't remember seeing that. I'll take your word for it.
But yeah,
regardless of the, you know, issues that scene has, like the four things that I brought up, apart from that, yes, it was very enjoyable seeing Ben Kingsley, his character again.
Yeah,
for sure.
And then when little Morris, the mythological creature, shows up.
Yeah, and he just thought he was imagining it the whole
time. He just thought he was going crazy, you know. He's been down there for a while now. And then Shang and Katie just go, "What is that?" And he's like, "Oh, thank God, you can see him too.
You can see Morris?
And then it's just like, it starts making these noises, and it's like, he's like, "Oh, well, Morris says," and it's like, "Wait, you can understand it?" Like, when they're like, where is his face? And he's just like, oh, he's actually quite sensitive about that. So, it did have its moments and everything. I really liked it. Because, like, that's one thing I really liked about this movie, is that it wasn't just straight action. There's comedy. There's this and that, which made it very enjoyable in my case. But, yeah, I did. He definitely had some awesome other parts as you get further into the movie. Yeah. He has some great one-liners in there as well. Great casting choice, I think, for this movie.
Absolutely. There's a lot of characters that were just hidden. Like, there was just one scene where there were like six different characters that were hidden, and there were even a couple characters that were hidden you can't even see in here because there was like artwork for them, some characters that they were planning on putting in there. So I'll just mention that real quick. So the two characters that were going to be in that scene when they get to the, what's it called? The Golden Daggers Club in Macau. The two characters that were going to be in there. I don't know how serious of a plan it was. It might have been a joke. But there was some artwork that was released that both Deadpool and Proxima Midnight were going to be in the main ring fighting instead of Wong and Abomination. So that would have been awesome, but I guess they decided they wanted to wait on Deadpool and continue just...
God, they make us wait on them. Deadpool on everything.
I know. Yeah, they just keep teasing Deadpool. Anyway, so those guys were in there. Well, in there, but not in there. And then obviously we had Wong was in there, an Abomination, and it is the same Abomination from the Incredible Hulk movie with Edward Norton. And then
played by the same guy, right?
I think so. I'm not certain about that, but I think so.
No, I have it here. Yeah, same guy. Which is really weird because like
you definitely don't need to have the same guy.
I know, that's what I was about to say. I was like, they didn't really need him, I guess, for his facial. Maybe they did motion capture for
him. Yeah, must have been motion capture.
But like, they really didn't need him because he didn't really say much. And I thought his look, his new look was interesting as well. Because his look is much different than his look in Incredible Hulk.
Yeah.
So it was really interesting, but good to see him again. And it just it also makes me wonder, like, what has happened with him over the past few years? Like,
yeah, because he was pure villain before. Now he's kind of chummy with Wong. Like,
yeah, they leave together. He's like, we were supposed to stage that fight. And it's just like, maybe if you hit the way that we went over. Yeah, I was just like,
you're supposed to throw your punches. Like, here's how it feels. And then he makes him punch himself.
Yeah, yeah. So cool. Yeah. And I was just like, what is going on here? I thought this was like Wong in a fight to the death, but it's not what I thought it was. Yeah. And then it just leads it actually, and I don't think this is a spoiler for maybe it is. For Doctor.
So Street. Just to clarify spoilers, this is spoilers for Shang-Chi only.
Yeah, yeah.
We're going to try to avoid spoilers from other stuff.
Yeah. So I won't really go. I actually won't go into it because it is a spoiler for other things. So I will not go into that. But it is interesting to see them chummy.
Yeah, yeah. It's very unexpected.
It is. Especially since all he wants to do is just be the strongest, like, creature.
Being.
Yeah, the strongest being. And he's just like he was addicted to the power and everything of like the radiation and the mutation and everything. And then all of a sudden he's just like following Wong everywhere.
Yeah. Pretty cool. So hopefully we'll get more Abomination at some point. We still have yet to get, I guess Incredible Hulk was technically a Hulk solo movie, but
mm-hmm.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get one with Mark Ruffalo at some point. Maybe Abomination will be in it. Maybe as his ally instead of his enemy.
Hard maybe.
But yeah, so then in that club, there's a bunch of other people that are sprinkled in there, some other references. So we get Helen. She's one of the Black Widows. She's in one of the side fights. And then we get
is she the one that...
She's fighting the Extremis fighter.
Oh, is she the one that like when the dude's like showing them through the glass fighting pits and everything, he's like, "Good job." He compliments her on her fight and everything.
I think so.
Yeah, he's like, "Good job." And she's just stabbed a dude. I was like, "What is going on here?" Like they walk past this one dude and Katie's like, "I love your mask." He's like, "Thanks."
Oh, that was a different guy.
Yeah, it was a different guy, but it was like in that same scene.
That same scene when they're walking down the hallway.
Yeah, when they're walking down the hallway. I think
she's in one of those.
And the Extremis is from Iron Man 3, right?
Yep.
Okay, that's what I thought.
Yep. So the Extremis, that's one of the guys that's like like lava skin, I guess.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah. Where like it comes like from their anger or whatever.
Yeah. And some of the people, like when they take that drug or whatever, they just melt.
Yeah.
They explode. But the ones that actually do survive, their skin looks like it's made of lava, basically.
Yeah.
So yeah, we got one of those guys fighting a Black Widow. That was one of the fights, and then there's also the Spike Face guy that you mentioned. So I don't know who that is, but the best I could find, when she says hello to that guy, and you know, she likes his like Spike Face mask or whatever. He says, I'm probably pronouncing this wrong, but Terima kasih, which is like a greeting, I think, in either Indonesia or Malaysia. So there are actually no Marvel characters from Indonesia, but there is one from Malaysia. And that's actually from a video game. It's not actually in the comics as far as I know. It's Sunbird. So that may have been a reference to him. Not totally sure though. I think that's all the characters that I remember in that scene. So yeah, we got a lot just in that one scene with them walking down the hallway. There's a lot of characters that were referenced, so it's pretty cool. So that main character in that bus fight scene, he is from the comics, and a couple other characters that he goes up against at one
point. Oh, Razor Fist?
Yeah. A couple other characters he goes up against are Wolverine and Deadpool. So, gotta wonder if that was intentional.
That's fair.
Another Deadpool tease, potentially.
I know, right?
But speaking of that bus scene, that was another scene that I had issues with for two reasons. First of all, I don't remember exactly how long he had been on the run. So he escaped when he was like 14.
14 is when he was sent on the mission from his father.
Right, and he immediately, like within like a year,
I don't think he got to the United States until he was 15.
Right. About a year or so.
So yeah,
now about he's a year. Like what, mid 20s?
I would put like him that. Around mid 20s. Because
at one point, Katie said that she had known him for half of his life, implying that he's now 30 or 28. Obviously, I'm sure she's just estimating, but so mid to late 20s seems like. In all that time, he hasn't had any reason to use his martial arts, and there's no indication that he's been training. They do show him doing push-ups, but that's it. That's all we get. So to me, he hasn't been doing heavy training. He should be rusty. And yet at the start of that bus fight scene, he goes immediately into, grandmaster martial arts expert mode. So that was a little unrealistic to me. I mean, maybe that's a little too nitpicky, but I would have expected him to at least trip or lose his footing a little bit, just something to show that he's shaking off the rust, that he's getting back into it, because he hasn't had a serious fight in at least a decade.
Yes, you can say that. I mean, like, we don't really know what happened between 15 and 25-ish.
But the fact that his friend Katie was so surprised by that, and they've been very tight pretty much the entire time that he's been in San Francisco.
Well, that's fair.
He
may have had incidences where she wasn't around, where he's had to defend himself at some point. Not like on the level that the bus,
they don't mention
bus would. Him trying to keep a low profile and everything.
Right. And the fact that that appears to be the first run-in that he's had with anybody from the Ten Rings. And as far as we know, there's nobody else that has it in for him. Nobody. Because he...
Right. The Ten Rings are the only ones that...
training with his dad.
Yeah.
And he didn't end up assassinating the person that he was supposed to. So as far as we know, he has no enemies.
Actually, he did.
Oh, did he?
Remember when he's in Tang Lo? or Tang Lao, and Katie comes sit next to him, and he said, "Remember when I told you that I couldn't go through with it?" And he's like, "I lied."
Okay, I forgot that.
Yeah.
Well, regardless, so yeah, maybe he has another enemy or two.
Which is why he ran away, because he didn't know how to live with it, you know, and you know, mm-hmm. and all that stuff.
So it, I guess there might have been a little bit.
So I actually but I have a.
They don't mention any of it, which is kind of
right. Right. Sorry, but I also think, like, while yeah, it's true, like, we only see him do push-ups and minor activity in the opening. I would assume that he would find somewhere to train, like, whether it's like a gym or something else, like, because, you know, if you kind of put yourself in the mindset of Shang, yeah, he changed his name to Sean, but he's always going to be the son of the Mandarin. And, you know, you never know if your dad's going to send some people after you. You know, you kind of live your life always under the assumption that your dad's going to be after you at some point in your life.
You would think so, but there's no way his training is as intensive as it was as a kid.
Because
he was, like,
too.
Basically fighting for his life.
Well, that's true too, but it could be also like a Jason Bourne type thing where it's just like, you know, it's just so ingrained in your mind that it just kicks in.
Yeah, but with Jason Bourne, he wasn't out of it for that long. He was only out of it for like a month or two, right?
Well, and that's true too.
We're talking about a decade.
We're talking like, yeah, 12 years.
So,
but yeah,
even if
you know,
he was training, like, you know, he would be.
He would have to have somebody on his level
to
really.
Because, like, yeah. If you're gone for long enough, your mentality is going to change over time. Where you're like, well, I've gotten away with it for this long. Like, I'm probably safe. You know?
Yeah.
So he's going to let his guard down at some point and, you know, not train his heart. It's a very normal human thing. And,
no, that's
he's technically not, like, he doesn't have any superpowers technically.
No, he doesn't. He's just...
So he's, you know, he's human. Like, he doesn't have like these martial
he
arts.
He still bleeds.
Yes. So he doesn't have these martial arts abilities because of some, like, you know, radioactive accident or whatever. He hasn't
right,
from
yeah.
training. So if he stops training, he's gonna get rusty, he's gonna lose some muscle tone, you know, all that stuff. So I don't know. I'm nitpicking. Like I said, it was a minor thing. Like, I would expect him to get back into it at some point.
Yeah.
But it just seemed unrealistic that he was able to pick it up like that. But like I said, I'm nitpicking. The other issue that I had with that scene, and I mentioned this in the non-spoiler, just the amount of convenient things that happened in that scene. Just the amount of luck, really, that went into it. The fact that nobody got hurt. And there was that part where they were on, like, the back of the bus and all the pedestrians needed to move to the front of the bus. Not a single person in a moment of a life or death situation panicked or tripped or did anything like that. And they were all able to go over that clearly very dangerous and not easy jump to get to the front of the bus, like,
no, that is
tripped. Like,
that is just, true, and there was nobody on the other side like helping them along too.
Yeah, I mean, there was that one guy that was like, "Hey, how you doing? Hi
Yeah, but he was filming the whole time. He was filming
wasn't
on his
helping anybody.
he's like sup dude.
Yep.
Like, but yeah, I mean, like, I love that guy's one line in that scene, though. Like, he's like so mellow in that scene,
mm-hmm.
but like the bus driver gets knocked on
yeah.
everything. He's like I would drive, but every time I try to do it, people yell at me.
And I was so just apparently, like, it's been in multiple situations.
I know, I was
like, that.
I was like, why do they keep letting him on the bus then if he's gotten into these situations? But yeah, I mean, it was very you're right. Yeah, when they crossed that section, it was very unrealistic that, you know, nobody was like freaking out. Like, I actually thought, like, when that was happening, one person was gonna like be like so scared to do it that
right.
they refused to go
yeah.
across.
That's
and then
typical, like,
and
any
then
other
kinda
movie would
yeah,
like that. Somebody
so
would
like
freak
he
out
would
and
have
cause
to
some kind of drama.
Like Shang would have to like find a way to like knock him, like knock Razorblade or something, somebody, get him stuck in something, like maybe get his arm, his blade stuck in the wall or something, so he can actually go over, help the person cross, and then continue the fight, you know. Something like that, because I thought that would make it a more real moment, you know, somebody too scared to do it, you know, because
and all but, that. Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. Like, it just didn't seem realistic.
It
like,
didn't. Everything was just like working, but like perfectly. Everything like, was going so fast happen. Too. It's just like unless you really break it down, it's just like, oh, okay, third cross. But yeah, I kind of agree with you also with the whole he went from just a valet driver to kung fu martial arts master in the span of a split second. It would have been nice because like, and I think they kind of overplayed it a little bit with his martial arts prowess. Like even like Jackie Chan in his movies, like when he goes up into a fight, he gets hit. Right. He gets hit sometimes and he like he reacts like he's like, oh, he's like he just got hit in the face and he's like, oh, and he'll like rub his nose or something like that and it'll be like and he'll like show, you know, he's not he's not perfect. So it would have been nice to see something like that where and you know, just like you said, a lot of it's luck because like he went out a window, got up on the top of the bus and then got all the way to the front of the bus and like hung on the side and told Katie to open up the the bus door. I was like, for somebody who like you've never done that before and you haven't used any martial arts skills in like you said, in like over a decade,
yeah,
you're really good at that.
Right. Yeah, there's just a lot of like luck and convenience and
it was but
whatever. It was still
yeah, really it was very past. Entertaining though.
Look past that, yeah. If you can look past that stuff,
oh yeah,
just enjoy it for what it is. It's incredible.
I still enjoyed it.
No, I did too, for sure. Like I said, I'm kind of nitpicking, and like these are the like my least favorite, like the things that I dislike about the movie the most, you know. But that's like it beyond these like nitpicky things that I have. I really can't say anything bad about the movie. Like it's a really solid movie. And there was another scene that had like a lot of convenient things that happened, which is the fight at the club when they were fighting all the ninjas on the scaffolding on the side of the building. Somehow all these ninjas, they get kicked once and they fall all the way down. But
you know, I was actually quite concerned about that. Well, there were two concerns about the ninjas in this movie. One that I don't know, I didn't like the way they kind of their appearance, the look of the mm-hmm. ninjas in this movie. Like, I didn't understand why they were all wearing like motorcycle helmets or something. That was just really weird. And I was like, that would just throw their counterbalance and everything off, yeah. Unless they've trained for years of wearing those things while they fight. It just seemed really like weird for them to be wearing those giant helmets on top of their, and they're almost like, in like police riot gear, if you look at them most closely enough, it's almost like they're police riot gear ninjas. And I'm just like, well, this is weird. But yeah, like they get kicked once and then they do a scream and they fall.
The building. Nobody and happens just, to like grab onto a ledge, but every time she gets knocked down or Katie gets knocked down, they always like land safely.
And yeah. Just, like, and I was just like, they're not. I was like, what's their dad doing? I mean, he's not a very good teacher if his people keep dying from one kick. It's just like,
yeah, I mean, you would think one of them would have like a grappling hook or something. I mean, they're ninjas. They have like
they can grab onto the bamboo with their hands and be like, oh, I'm still alive. Let me climb back up. I'm a ninja. Yeah.
So yeah,
the only one that seems to be very prowess in their ninja abilities is the guy in the actual mask, the blue guy who like trains him.
Yeah, his name, I don't know.
I forget his name.
The Death Dealer.
Yeah.
Played by Andy Lee.
Yeah, you never see his face. That's unfortunate because he's a pretty cool dude. But yeah, the Death Dealer, like he's the only one that remotely looks like a ninja in this movie and has ninja like a ninja prowess where he can just like do all these things. Like he blows open a window comes out, steals what's her name, Zhuge Liang's pendant, and then does this ninja stuff and then disappears. I'm like, oh, that's a ninja. But yeah, I also liked in that scene though where they paid homage to Jackie Chan in Rush Hour.
Too, yeah, I was gonna mention that
when Katie's spoiler... hanging off the when Katie is like trying to climb on the bamboo, and then all of a sudden the bamboo starts to break and everything, her bamboo starts to bend. I was just like, when I saw that the first time, I was like, man, I'm getting major Rush Hour vibes here.
Rush Hour too.
Yeah. So yeah, I thought that was there. Great.
There's also in the bus scene another reference to a Jackie Chan movie.
The Jackie, the jacket move that he does.
Yep. Jacket move. That was a Battle of the Bronx. What was that one called? Rumble in the Bronx.
Rumble in the Bronx. Classic movie. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I thought that was a great note to him too. But yeah, it was great. I liked it. That there was a bunch of holes in that fight scene on the scaffolding. Great choreography though. It was really great choreography. It just didn't make sense. It didn't just make sense where like they get hit once and they just die. It's like activating a cheat in a video game.
Right. Yeah.
So, but other than that, still, it didn't take really away from the movie.
No, it really didn't. And like I said, I'm kind of harping on some.
It's like, unless you're
kind of like getting the bad stuff out of the way, because everything else apart from these nitpicks is really solid.
Yeah. But yeah, I would have to agree with you about that scaffolding scene where it was just like, it didn't make sense where they got hit.
Especially like the ninjas falling and Katie doesn't.
Come on. For somebody who doesn't have any martial arts prowess, Katie survives this whole ordeal with not a scratch. She doesn't even get a scratch on this whole thing. Yeah. And all these ninjas just fall to their deaths. And it's just like, well, obviously Katie's doing something good.
She's got some other kind of superpower going on. There's like a domino with her luck superpower. Maybe she does have that superpower.
Maybe she
made that lucky shot at the end of the movie, right?
Oh my god.
she's very lucky. It's maybe that's what's going on here. Maybe she just has that superpower.
Especially with one day of training with the bow and arrow.
Yeah. We'll if they reveal that in the sequel that she actually does have Domino's superpower, then I forgive all the nitpicks about this movie.
It would all make sense. Right? It just makes sense that everything that was just like, you know, that was extremely lucky that they were in that situation. Yeah. Oh my god, it makes sense. They finally revealed it.
Yeah, that would be pretty great.
Could you imagine if like Domino's just like in hiding or something, like just in these scenes, just secretly there, and just like, yeah, they were lucky because I was there. But yeah, I was, speaking of the Death Dealer, I was really hoping that Shang and the Death Dealer were gonna have some epic fight to the death type of thing going on in this movie.
They did have a little bit of a fight.
Well, yeah, they did, but it was never really resolved, and I was just like,
then he's just dead.
Yeah, I know. And I was just like, really? That's how they're gonna do him?
So I did try to research that guy a little bit, just looking into some of the comic history. So in the comics, he's only in like 4 comics ever.
Yeah.
So he's a very minor character.
Very minor.
But apparently he was in there long enough that they mentioned that he has a son. Son's name was Howley. So, you know, maybe that's why they killed him off, just so they would be able to bring Hao Li into the picture in the sequel. So maybe he'll come in and get,
you know, I don't, or something. Well, I don't doubt that. Or, I mean, you know, after that second end credit scene, he might just take up his father's position.
Mm-hmm.
To Zhuge Liang now.
Yeah, could be.
Yeah. You know, now that she's got the Ten Rings gang or empire.
Right. It's definitely a women empowerment moment at the end there.
Yeah, that so was I really enjoyed that too. I really enjoyed that because, like, when Katie was talking to Julie Lang, Zhu Ji Lang, in the dungeon and everything, and she was like talking about the golden daggers and everything like that. She's like, well, or actually, when she's in the Golden Daggers Club, she's like, oh, so you own this place? And he's like, yeah, if I couldn't join my father's empire, I'd build my own. And then the end credit scene is just like, oh, it's a full circle right there. That's a full circle.
Yep. So going back to that bus scene, that guy on the bus was actually in another Marvel movie.
I know. I noticed it. I did. And he was going on a bus in that movie too.
Was he?
Yeah. Yeah.
Maybe I don't remember the whole scene. The one that I'm talking about, he was in something else.
You're talking about the dude filming?
Yes, yeah, that guy.
Yeah, so he was in, I believe, Spider-Man.
Yeah, Spider-Man Homecoming.
Yeah,
and I don't remember the whole scene. The part that I remember, he was standing outside the hot dog stand, and Spider-Man was on top of the building, and then he said, "Hey, do a flip."
Oh yeah. I got my scenes confused. Yeah. Yeah, he's outside the hot dog stand. That's right. Yeah. He's like, hey, do a flip. Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah.
That was great.
I love a little like minor details like that.
I do like minor details. Like,
I mean, I don't know if that guy just like got lucky and happened to be an extra in two Marvel movies, which props to you, man. That'd be awesome. I wonder if they brought him back intentionally. And
I know. I would love to be a more.
Maybe he'll be something more.
I know, right? It's, but I like how it's just like you see how big of a deal he is, kind of. Well, not a big deal, but you see how popular he is because, mm-hmm. He starts streaming, and you're just like, wait, is he like a popular streamer? Is he? Like how
you can see like all the followers.
Well, you can see like all the likes. Yeah, you can see the follower count and the likes and everything's going as he before he flips over. But then when they show up in China, I think, where he goes to his sister, and the dude's like, "Oh, you're bus boy," and he's like showing him the video, and he's like, "Okay, so that's a thing now." It's like, and you're the driver. It's just it's like, okay, everyone is like, that guy is like view count and followers.
Yeah,
like
that video definitely went viral.
He's just like,
I mean, if that were to happen in real life, that would absolutely go viral.
Oh, most definitely. Most definitely. But yeah, it's pretty cool.
So I gotta wonder, because I mean, Spider-Man, Homecoming was in New York, right?
I thought the same thing, too, and I was like, what?
Is he on vacation? Did he move because he was like tired of all the stuff that was happening in New York, and now he's got this to deal with?
I know, right?
A magnet for superhero fights, apparently.
You know, that would have been a great post-credit scene. If it was just him, if he's just like looking on like Craigslist or looking on like a apartment or some list, going, I guess I'm moving to Cleveland, yeah. Like trying to find a place where none of this stuff happens.
Yeah, just go to Alaska.
Yeah, it's just or him on the phone with like his mom, and it's like, you know why? Remember why I left New York? Well, happened in San Francisco too. You know, something like that. You can't catch a break, and it's just like, at least and you know what else is lucky about that whole thing? And
what's that?
The fact that he films the whole thing, bus crashes, everything crashes, and his phone did not break.
Imagine, like, how did they not hit more bumps or like potholes or something as that was going? It's like they never lost their footing while they were fighting, you know. Like, they never got, like, flung up in the air. Like
The only time you see him lose some of his footing is when he's on top of the bus.
Right.
But other than that...
Like, all the red lights that they must have run there, too, like...
And when the bus actually hits other vehicles, you don't really see much of a... It must have a really good suspension unit on it.
I mean, not anymore.
Not anymore. It's cut in half. But yeah, it's just... other than those small minor details, it's pretty
it was really fun.
It's really fun, yeah. But I had to wonder about him, and it's just like, is this guy high? Because he's really chill on the bus. Like, he's like, you got it, man. I'm like, what is wrong with this guy? Does he not have a job?
Freaking out about this at all?
Yeah, he's not. He's like usually people would be like, this guy's about to get jumped. I need to call 911 now. No, he's like,
maybe he's just used to it because of all of his time.
I know. I mean, New York. He's just like, he's like, this is actually quite common for me.
Just another day. Yes, I guess I got to record this. Might as well benefit from it.
Yeah, he's like, but yeah, great. That was a good cameo for him. I liked it.
So, what was your favorite fight scene? There were quite a few.
My favorite fight scene?
You can take a minute to think about it if you want. I think mine was, I mean, it's honestly hard to decide because there were so many good fight scenes. Choreography was amazing throughout. I think my favorite fight scene was beginning of the movie when Mandarin meets, what's her name, Ying Li, and they end up getting married after that fight.
I
really liked that fight scene. Honestly, that was probably the only fight scene that I couldn't really find any issues with, like I did with the other ones. And the music in that fight scene just worked so well to enhance the fight. Like every moment just like played so well with the music.
It did.
And just like all, like, you know, slow motion isn't always a good thing, but it just worked so well in that fight. Every time they would do that, they were just like giving each other looks. Like you could tell they were falling in love while they were fighting. It was so cool and so well done. And there were just so many different things going on. And the fact that she was just a complete badass and like the only person that was able to actually take the Mandarin on in a fight and actually beat him. It was just so cool. I love that fight.
Yeah, it's you know, as I'm thinking about the fight scenes in this movie, there are some that are better than others, but you know, at first my original because as I was watching it last night, and I was going watching it, I'm just like, other than the whole ninjas dying it from one punch, I did quite enjoy the scaffolding scene. But I would, like, when you're talking about it and like thinking about everything, I do have to give it to the initial scene between Ying Li and the Mandarin as well, because it's like that classic martial arts choreography. You get major Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon vibes from that scene, because they also do slow motion and everything. And and I just love Yi Ling's character straight off the bat when they revealed her.
Me too, for sure.
In there, and it's just like, it's because like the fight wasn't like really action-packed fight. It was more
she's all about just like the perfection of martial arts.
It's just and it's just her moving. She's not actually doing any physical attacks to him. Like, she's not on the offense, she's just more on the defense,
right?
And just making him miss.
Yep.
And then
until the end, what she does, and then she,
and then she just flings him into a tree.
Like, all right, we're done here.
But like the thing is, like, so when he demands that, like, she take him to Tao Lo and everything, and then you see him activate the 10 rings on his arms, and she goes, is that it? Like, her confidence and everything, she's like that doesn't intimidate me. I love the straw hat and the whole outfit that she's got on. So made it so great. And like you said, the music just made it seem so fluid, the whole scene and everything. And I just loved how it unfolded as you watch it.
It's so good.
But as I was watching that scene, and like you said, it's very, like I said, it's very Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, which I was very happy to see later on in the film with Michelle Yeoh, who came out as their aunt in the film, who was in Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon.
Oh,
So
yeah.
I feel like she had a lot of input with this choreography, on how it can unfold and everything, because she's really well known for her martial arts as well. So yeah, that's my favorite more favorite fight scene in it. I
Okay,
also
so
love
we're in
how,
agreement. Cool.
yeah, in agreement. I also like how the movie starts off where it starts off in Chinese
Oh, yeah,
with
definitely.
that classic intro.
Just like immediately just letting you know what you're in for. Like this
Yeah,
is
it's just like,
not the kind of MCU movie that we usually do. It's a very different style. Get ready. It was just so good.
but yeah, I'm gonna agree with you. The first fight scene is my favorite.
Technically, that was like the third, but close enough.
Well, yeah,
Because
because
there's
when he
that
takes on
attack
the
on the
entire,
fortress
yeah, when he
that,
takes on the entire army in the
yeah, he
beginning,
just charges on his horse. That was so cool. I love the way they
that's
did
just,
that. He
I
just
like
like
how he
sees
created a
the
shield.
volley of arrows blotting out the sun, and he's
Yeah,
like,
he just,
whatever, don't care. Just like flings his rings around him, blocks all of
I'm just gonna create a
them.
wall of air with my rings and just.
Yep. Was so cool.
It was pretty
I
cool.
had to watch that a couple times to figure out what happened with the horse, because the first time I saw it, like when he like propels himself off the horse, I was like, is that horse dead?
I thought so too.
But if you watch it frame by frame, the horse is fine. He just gallops off to the side.
No horses were harmed in the filming of this movie. I thought so too. I was like, that's pretty dangerous. I mean, he's probably done it like 100 times before. The horse is like, oh, it's another Monday.
Yep, that horse knows when to, tense up his abdominal areas so
He's
that he can take
like, all
the
right, absorb the
impact.
aftershock. But yeah, I always want, I thought about that horse too. I was like,
Poor guy. Man, I've been thinking about the amount of terrible things that happen to horses just in all these like, war movies, especially, back in the day. When horses were used a lot more commonly, before the age of tanks and planes and stuff. And man, horses, it's just,
They've had it rough.
yeah. Especially this book that I've been reading lately, they talk about just like killing horses like it's nothing. And they're like, oh, I need to get to this place. So I'm gonna ride this horse to death. And then when I get there, I'm gonna find a new horse and then just ride that one because I really need to get where I'm going. And it's just, the amount of abuse and just murder of horses and all these books, everything is
No, it's true. I can think of a bunch of
it's
movies
rough.
where like the horse is like the most abused animal in the
Yeah.
cinematic history.
And
I'm
then
just
you get
like,
Star Wars with the horse equivalent acting as a shelter.
poor Tauntaun.
Oh my gosh, it's
But
terrible.
that's true. Like in they did it in
But this
True
horse
Grit.
was okay.
This horse was fine, and it's the only horse to show up in this movie.
Yeah, I think
Technically.
you're right. I think so.
Technically, it's the only horse to show up. I mean, there were like
Horse-like creatures,
those
yeah.
Tao Lo unicorn horse things, but this was the actual horse. Well, it was actually CGI, but still,
Yeah. So
like
I
this.
like that. The more I see it, the more I just hate when stuff like that happens. Like like the Patriot, I remember this moment when Mel Gibson was charging. I don't remember the other actor's name. I mean, I love the other actor, but
Oh
his name's
yeah, he's
not
in
going to
Harry
mind.
Potter series.
Yes. He's Malfoy. But yeah, he's charging him with his gun, and then the other guy's charging his horse, and then he just like slides on the ground and just stabs the horse and makes the other guy fly off. I'm like, poor horse, like
I know, yeah.
he's basically a slave here. He doesn't have any choice about this, and
Jason
he's
Isaacs
just
is
being
his name, by
killed.
the way.
Oh yeah, I love Jason Isaacs.
Yeah,
He's
he's great.
great actor. But man,
But yeah, I mean, like,
poor horses.
I just watched Braveheart the other night, and when the first like major battle scene between the Scottish and the English, they hold up these big long spears that they made out of logs and everything. for the cavalry to run charge. Into.
Yep.
And I'm just like, those poor horses just running into these pointed sticks. I'm just like, they didn't even aim them at the people. They aimed them up for the horses to run into. I was like, poor horses.
There's actually a movie. I don't honestly remember a whole lot about it. It's called War Horse, but it's all about, like, you know, all the bad stuff that happens to horses in war, and it just really makes you sympathize so much for them.
I do sympathize every time I see a horse. If you ever saw that movie Last Samurai with Tom Cruise, like every horse died in that in that movie, and I was just like, oh man, they just got Gatling gunned. That was horrible. Just nice to know that that horse survived.
Yes, he survived. He's 100% of horses in this movie survived.
It would have been nice if he, it would have been actually really funny if the Mandarin like made a reference to his horse, like at one point, like when his family, like, when his kids come home and they're at the dinner table, he's like, my horse was more obedient than you.
All right, anyway, enough horse talk, enough horsing around here. I had this.
Fair enough.
All right, so other cool facts about the movie, / Easter eggs, I guess. So Bill Pope, he's the guy that did the cinematography for Shang-Chi. He also did it for The Matrix. So if you get some Matrix vibes watching the movie, especially with that fight scene that we were talking about, that's why.
Mm.
So
that's fair.
Appreciated that. It's pretty cool. Obviously, a lot of great cinematography in The Matrix.
There was.
So there were some references to the blip. So when Shang-Chi picks up Katie near the beginning of the movie before they go to work, there's a blip support poster. that they walk past at some point. And, that's for people who were, blipped out, and, it's a support line for them and all that. And then next to that, there's a poster for Blip Sync, which is a dating app for people who were blipped, which is funny. And that is definitely something that would happen nowadays, if the blip were something that were to actually happen in real life, that is definitely something that would happen. So
I saw, referring to the blip, there was like a little it's not really Easter egg, but it's kind of a little like side thing where, like, when they're in the karaoke bar, they're singing songs, like two of them are old songs, and then they're singing Little Nas X, which shows that Lil Nas X actually survived the blip.
Right.
and I heard I had mentioned this to somebody else, and they're like, yeah, did you ever see the tweet from Lil Nas X where he actually tweeted, I survived the blip?
That's pretty great.
Because after he saw Shang-Chi, he posted on his Twitter account, I survived the blip. I thought that was pretty funny.
I love that. So then I got two more here. So at one point in the movie, it's really hard to see. It's in the main fight with Shang-Chi against his sister in the Daggers Club. You can see the Madripoor flag in the background. There've been a few references to that. So we see the Madripoor flag here. They flat out talk about Madripoor in Moon Knight, and Madripoor was heavily featured in the Falcon and the Winter Soldier series. So it seems like we're definitely going to be going back there at some point. So right now Sharon Carter is still there.
Was that before they started their cage fight?
I think it was at the beginning. I don't remember exactly. It was behind the cage bars, so it was pretty hard to make
out. So like when they first enter the cage, like when they first introduced them to the thing? Okay. Yeah. I saw something on the walls, but I couldn't make out what it was. So
yeah, I'll be honest. I looked that one up, so I only saw a picture of it.
Okay.
I think it was at the beginning of the fight scene.
somebody's got to have really good eyes to see that.
Yeah, I mean, people, you know, they go frame by frame in these movies. They catch everything. I'm sure there's some stuff that's missed, and, you know, eventually, you know, directors going to come out a few years from now being like, hey, you guys missed this. I mean, it's happened in video games so many times where there's all these Easter eggs that people don't discover for decades. And then one day the people who developed the game, they just come out and they're like, hey, there's this secret that's been in this game for over, you know, 30 years that apparently nobody found. So here you go. Have fun. I've seen that happen. I mean, not a lot. Like, ones that go that long undiscovered is super rare, but, you know, I'm sure that's going to happen with Marvel movies at some point.
Oh yeah. I'd be really, I would actually think that it would be like on a commentary track, like as an extra in the DVDs or Blu-rays and everything, like the director going, oh, interesting fact in this scene. Mm-hmm. So that'd be cool.
So one other Easter egg that I have, kind of. So because of the blip, this movie took place in 2024, which is the year of the dragon. So appreciate that. Pretty cool.
That is cool that they tie it in so well, that you know, in the year of the dragon, they supposedly share like the heart of the dragon and everything, and then the great defender or great protector is a dragon. So it's just like dragon themed.
Yeah, one thing I was disappointed in from this movie, I really wanted Fin Fang Foom so badly. But it was not Fin Fang Foom. It was the Great Protector.
That's
whatever. Fair. Maybe we'll get him in a future one. Maybe they'll just keep it dragon themed.
That would have been great. That would have been great.
I've got a big Fin Fang Foom figurine right behind me over here. So.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So I went ahead and grabbed him because, oh my gosh. Well, anyway, I'll show you guys the outline. There he is. You can kind of see his wings if I move around enough.
I see his teeth. I can see his teeth. Oh, that's so great. I didn't even pick up on that when you said you were going to go grab him, and I was just like, wait a minute.
There's got to be a way I can do this. Maybe take a picture or something. But anyway, it's if you want to know what he looks like, he's the Fin Fang Foom colossal figurine from the HeroClix game. So that's what I was holding up there. You know, you can't see it.
Maybe put like a little picture like up in the corner right there.
Yeah, maybe I'll throw it in the editing. Yeah,
just be like, this is what he looks like. That was very funny
though. I'll put the picture right over here. So this is the Fin Fang Foom figurine that I have.
That's great.
But yeah. He was in Marvel Ultimate Alliance, and obviously I've got him in this game. So yeah, I was really excited when I learned that there was gonna be a dragon in Shang-Chi, and people, you know, initially were assuming that it was gonna be Fin Fang Foom, but nope. At least some people. I was definitely.
Yeah. Yeah. That didn't even cross my mind when it happened. I was just like, but you know what I did like about the dragon in this movie? I did like how like the dragon had its own set of abilities instead of just being a dragon that flies around.
Yeah.
Like this dragon can manipulate the water. Like, I thought that was cool. Like, it's a water dragon, apparently. Apparently it has no fire whatsoever, which I thought was pretty interesting as well. I was like, it's not a fire dragon. What kind of dragon is it? Well, it lives in a lake, so I guess it's a water dragon.
Right.
But yeah, I was just like, which leads me to think that it's not the only dragon in that realm.
Right.
Didn't they
talk about that at one point? Like all the other dragons were killed off, and this is the last one that actually survived and was able to.
Was it? I thought
they said that. I don't remember.
I don't remember if it was the last one to survive or what happened to the others.
Yeah. So they did talk something about like the history that. At some point.
Yeah, yeah, I remember. Because she's when their aunt was talking about, you know, we had all these big cities and more extravagant than the ones that you have and everything like that.
All right, so we looked it up. I was wrong. I was apparently getting the plot of this movie confused with Raya the Last Dragon.
Too many dragons.
So, yeah, too many dragon movies, apparently. So yeah, never mind. Yeah, you very well could be right. There could be other dragons in the realm. Although it kind of seems unlikely because the Great Protector came when the Dweller in Darkness was about to cross over into our universe. And you would think at like an extreme moment like that, everything would, you know, kind of come to help out. So like if there were other dragons, friendly dragons, I feel like they would maybe join it too. Because the Dweller in Darkness had been in that universe for quite a while and eating the souls from everybody. So they had covered a long distance, it sounded like, and they were about to cross over into our universe. So you would think at that point, maybe other dragons would have joined in, but maybe not.
That's fair. I mean, like, from what I've learned from anything about dragons being in movies and like anime or anything else, you know, dragons don't normally interact with people a lot unless they really have to, or like, you know, they're not allowed to interact. They're kind of considered almost like godlike creatures, or they're not allowed to interfere, like kind of like the gods of Mount Olympus, you know, they're not allowed to interfere with the lives of men. And maybe this dragon just so happened to be like, well, you're wrong. And just like showed up and was like, well, either we let them all die and or, you know, we can do something good, almost like Tyrael from Diablo 3.
Or Moon Knight, maybe be a better reference.
Like, yeah,
Great Protectors kind of like Khonshu, and then other dragons would be like the other Egyptian gods that are just,
yeah, it's just
like bystanders, not willing or permitting themselves to get involved.
Mm-hmm. So it could be something like that, where like this drag, because if you kind of like at the end of the movie, the dragon kind of flies off, and you know,
right?
You would think,
where's it going?
Yeah, it's just like
Darkness is dead, and
yeah, it was to protect the village and protect the people from the Dweller in Darkness, but now the job's done because the Dweller in Darkness is gone. You would think a water dragon, if it just ironically just lived in that lake and that's where everything just went down, it would return to the lake, but it didn't. It flew off.
Yeah.
As if it's like, well, you no longer need me, so I'm gonna go rejoin my kinfolk.
Right. That's kind of significant, actually, though, because they were saying like all their like special abilities and whatnot that they have are because of the Great Protector. So now that it's gone, do they not have it anymore?
Well, the Great Protector bestowed upon them like the dragon scales and all that stuff.
So they still have like the physical stuff that was like,
yeah, I think they still have the physical stuff, but I'm pretty sure like they also have their abilities too, because
I mean, that could just be like an aura kind of thing. Like you have to be in close proximity.
Because the dragon's there, that's the link that they share.
Yeah, I mean, it would make sense.
Or it's just a gift that the dragon bestowed upon their people. I mean,
yeah, but I mean, if you think of what's her face, Ying Li, when she left, she lost the abilities, and I don't think it was because she. I don't remember exactly what she said.
I think in the movie they said that Ying Li gave up her powers willingly, and I think she did that because she knew what kind of person the Mandarin was, and I feel like, you know, because like. I think they said she gave up her powers to be with the father.
Yeah, but they don't really go into detail about it. Giving up her powers could have meant just leaving, because when you leave, you're no longer in proximity, and you know, by default, that means that you're giving up your powers.
But you also have to consider like if it's a proximity thing, the entrance to Tao Lo is in Universe 616. And if you think about it, in when they get to Tao Lo, their aunt says, before the dark the dweller in darkness entered into your universe. So Tao Lo is in a different universe than than theirs. So if she was at the entrance of Tao Lo, she was not in the same universe of where that dragon was. So
there.
So she must have some strong connection to that dragon for for her to still be able to use her abilities there.
I mean, maybe the aura was like leaking through the portal or something. Maybe, I don't know.
Maybe it's part of the pendant that she keeps around her neck. Maybe that's the true source of their abilities. Well, she gives it to her kids then. She gives them each one. So who knows how it works, but the director knows.
Maybe.
Maybe.
It could just be one of those things that is deliberately left vague for, you know, the viewers, the audience to make their own. You know, come up with their own answer.
Because I thought that was the really interesting thing about Tao Lo is where when they're getting the tour and everything, they're like, oh yeah, Tao Lo is in a different universe than your home is. And I'm just like, now we're on multiverse theory.
Yeah.
And so I thought that was a great little reveal there. When they're like, oh yeah, this is a completely different universe. Our cities are more. And I liked how she was kind of bragging about their universe. She was like, our universe has
Better than yours.
Yeah, it's like we had until the dweller in darkness came and ruined everything. But yeah, I have a feeling like it's one of those situations where like the dragon bestowed a gift onto them and it's passed down through their lineage as well, a little, like, to an extent, you know?
Yeah.
Because I'm sure Shang-Chi and Zhu Jinlang, they have a connection to the dragon, as you can tell, because, like, in the movie, like, they get to ride the dragon, and the dragon trusts them and everything like that. So they know that they're the children of Yi Ling, so the dragon knows that, you know, they're children of this village and everything,
right.
But they don't have any special gifts like the rest of them do because they weren't born with it, because she gave up her powers before they were even born,
right?
So like if she never gave them up or anything like that, then they would have been born with the same abilities and stuff like that, innate abilities.
Maybe.
I mean, it could be a genetic thing too. I mean, because of their father too, it could have just neutralized it as well because of his immortality and whatever, and the Ten Rings and everything. So you never know. It's like saying that they were immortal and she gave up her immortality to become immortal. So it is
hard to say.
Yeah, because she said, because the way that she kind of their aunt kind of explains it, they're just like, we've been here for 4,000 years. It's like, have you been here for 4,000 years, or have your people been here for 4,000 years? I'm kind of not understanding what's going on here, you know.
I took it to mean their people.
Yeah, I took it in the fact that it was their people too, because she kind of the way she told the story of their people and everything made it sound like it was passed down from generation to generation,
right,
instead of her actually like explaining it as if she was there.
Right.
It's not like that Lord of the Rings, like Elrond going, I was there 3,000 years ago. You know. so yeah, I think it's just that's just my theory about it with the whole dragon and the abilities that, you know, she willingly just gave him up.
Yeah, it could be. But yeah, they definitely don't really tell us outright. So,
or the elders, you know, again, the elders could have just taken it away, taken them away from her because of her choice.
Whatever. Know? Like, really, you're going to get involved with that guy? All right.
Yeah, because, you know, they're
just like,
because, yeah, I know, right? Because they're like, we didn't, they were like, we didn't banish her, we didn't want you. When they said it to the Mandarin, they're just like, he's like, we didn't get rid of her, we just didn't want you in here. It's just like, oh well, a little turn of events there. But yeah
okay. Well, I think that's plenty. Did you have anything else you wanted to mention? I've covered everything that I wanted to talk about here, but
I just want to say that, like, my favorite funny moment of this movie,
okay,
for me, my favorite funny moment was right at the end when Wong takes Shang and Katie to Kaj Mata. Mm-hmm. And they're like, he's like you should go home, get some rest, and they're like, you're right, we should go home. Or and they all end up in the karaoke bar, and you see Wong singing in the karaoke bar.
I agree. It's honestly a toss up between that and the first time they do it in the movie. I love that was a recurring joke. It was really.
But did you notice that they actually they start with a song? I think it's Hotel California. I think they start with Hotel California in the opening. The first time they do it, and they end with it with Wong. So they actually finished the song with Wong, and I was just like, oh, that's pretty cool.
I didn't notice that.
Yeah, something like that. But yeah, I was just like, I did like that you got to see Captain Marvel and Mark Ruffalo, and which raised a little questions for me when you see Mark Ruffalo as Doc Bruce Banner. He's no longer intelligent. Hulk, you know.
So what's going on there? They don't tell us.
They don't say anything about that.
It seems like, I mean, every time we see Hulk now or Bruce Banner, something has changed significantly about it.
Yeah, it's like, so this is just the maybe next stage. They're not in sync anymore. I don't know.
Or maybe they've split.
His arm is still hurt from the whole snapping.
Right.
incident, which I thought was really a nice little detail, because it definitely puts the pinpoint on the timeline here. It's not that long after that whole incident, you know, when they brought everybody back.
Don't really know what happened there.
But looking forward to seeing things.
She-Hulk.
Yeah, so, maybe an answer in She-Hulk.
Yeah. So we'll see. But yeah, I don't know what's going on there. He could have split. He could have just reverted back to the way that he was before for reasons.
You would think he would stay in that form because
he's got the healing factor.
Yeah, he's got the healing factor while he's in Hulk mode, right?
Right.
But maybe he's healed and he's just...
Staying in that mode just drained too much energy, so he just needed to revert to Banner just to conserve energy sometimes. I don't know.
I mean, he was in Hulk mode for like 2 years when in Thor Ragnarok,
right?
So
well, it's not really clear how long he was in there because of like the way that time works.
Well, that's fair too. We did go over that, the way that time works differently on that planet.
So yeah, who knows how this actually helped.
But I'm looking forward to seeing what unfolds after this. And it did bring up some questions for
about the
Doctor Strange. Multiverse of Madness. But I don't want to go into that because I don't want to spoil that movie for anybody for this episode.
Yeah, sure. But about how old the rings are.
So I like that.
Right. There is something in Doctor Strange which it might be referring to, which I'm not going to spoil it either. I want to say something, but yeah, I don't want to spoil it.
Right.
But yeah, it might be referring to that because it is something very old and it was in Doctor Strange. I don't know if that's what they're referring to. Wouldn't necessarily make sense, but it could be.
Right. Another
I'll message you about it afterwards.
All right, yeah, do that. But you know what they never explain in this movie, Shang-Chi? They never explain why when the Mandarin uses the Ten Rings, why his are blue,
but yeah, when Shang-Chi
uses them, they're like a yellowish orange.
Yeah, color. I take that to be similar to like Star Wars with
yeah, I was gonna the light say side that and the dark like side. I feel like they did that to kind of show that, you know, Shang-Chi is pure of heart or something like that, and
right.
And his father is more corrupted the rings by using them to gain power and to conquer instead of using them for good and stuff like that. Yeah. That's my takeaway from it. But they never actually say why the colors are the colors.
Mm-hmm.
But other than that, I don't have anything else to add. Great movie.
Very solid movie. Hopefully you've already seen it by now, so we didn't spoil literally everything for you.
Right.
But yeah, if you haven't seen it, definitely recommend it. Very solid.
Very solid movie.
All right. Well, yeah, with that, we'll call it there. Thank you all so much for joining us. We love Marvel, so we could do this all day. But for now, we're going to call it a wrap. We really hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, make sure to drop us a like, rate us, follow us, all that good stuff. You can find us all over the web. Links for everything are in the channel description. Make sure to check out the polls on Spotify. We'd love to hear from you guys. And join us next time. It's finally happening. We're doing it. We've been talking about it for a while. And I hope you guys are ready for it. We're doing an episode dedicated to Howard the Duck. So once again, thank you so much for tuning in. We love you all 3,000. We hope you're all staying safe out there.